check it out now. No doubt now.
Ladies and gentlemen, he is the founder of Football Outsiders, the site that started all football analytics. You can follow him on Twitter at FO_AShots. That's S-C-H-A-T-Z. Ladies and gentlemen, the aforementioned Aaron Schatz. How you doing, Aaron?
Hey, I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I know we want to get to season win totals, but I would be remiss if I didn't play this 10 seconds for you and get your reaction, which I'm sure you have one too.
Well, it's not so much the probability. It'll be more so how I feel at that point about going for it. I know analytics has those things out there. We do have access to all of that. But I'm old school in the way that, you know, when we're playing, if I'm not feeling it, we're not doing it. So regardless of what that chart says.
Texans head coach David Culley on his thoughts on what he'll do on fourth downs regarding Aaron analytics. Just want to point that out. Oh, by the way, here is your reaction on Twitter, but you can expound on this. Have you thought about occasionally feeling it, you say to David Culley, rather than using, quote, I'm not feeling it as the default? Continue,
yeah,
sir.
So the problem is that coaches default to punting and then say, well, you know, I know we have access to analytics, but I wasn't feeling it this time. They never say, I went for it, even though analytics said I should punt, because I was feeling it this time. Like,
very true.
The gut is only used as an excuse in one direction. The gut is used as an excuse to not understand the analytics.
So true.
It's okay to sometimes use your gut and say, okay, I think based on the way things are going with the team, this is not a good time to go for it. But you do that occasionally. You don't do that every single time. If your gut says the same thing every time, you're not really using your gut, are you?
David Culley and Dan Campbell promising us such good stuff for the 2021 NFL season. Cannot wait.
As far as I know, give Dan Campbell credit. As far as I know, Dan Campbell has not said anything about wanting to punt all the time on fourth down.
He said
a lot of weird stuff.
Yes. Give him that. All right, Aaron, it's great to see you because we get to talk a little season win totals. Let's just talk about a few of your favorite, or maybe a couple of your favorite unders on the season as you see it through the lens of your numbers.
Sure. I mean, the team that I think we're most under on compared to Vegas is the Los Angeles Chargers. Everybody is expecting a big second-year leap from Justin Herbert, and we went back and looked at some of the best rookie quarterbacks of the last 35 years, and they didn't tend to take second-year leaps because they were already so good. In fact, on average, those quarterbacks were actually a little worse in their second year. And the Chargers' defense, people are expecting that Brandon Staley is going to turn it into last year's Rams defense, but they have a different personnel, and they are starting from a very different point. The Rams were an above-average defense already before Staley turned them into one of the best defenses in the league, and the Chargers are a below-average defense. So we have the Chargers as 7.3 average wins in our simulations. They also have a difficult schedule, by the way. And that's, I think, the strongest under that we have.
Wow, sounds like it. It's at 9.5. The under is juiced, so it's not exactly 9.5, but 7.23, was it? Wow.
7.3,
pardon me, for the Los Angeles Chargers. I'm curious, this has nothing to do with the Chargers and nothing to do with season win totals, but when you said about Justin Herbert, second year, and the drop-off, and I know this is not a second-year quarterback, so I'm making a lot of little leaps in my head, but Josh Allen, like, are we convinced he's the guy now to be as accurate as we saw last year? Like, in other words, that whole thing from college and early in his pro career where it was like, oh, the accuracy, that's always going to be the bugaboo with Josh Allen. Are we convinced he's not that guy?
There is a possibility, certainly, that Josh Allen had his career season last year and will never be that good again. But I think, you know, there's never been a quarterback who's improved his accuracy to quite this extent. But I think that he will stay roughly where he was last year. I don't think he's going to get any better than that. He might be a little bit, decline a little bit just because of central tendency, but I think he's still going to be one of the top quarterbacks in the league this year.
Okay, Chargers favorite under. Let's do one more under here before the break. We got a couple minutes.
What is Cleveland right now in Vegas?
Cleveland right now, all over the place. 10.5 is where we're seeing the Browns. Of course, a 17-game season we all should keep in mind.
So that is another under that we like then. They averaged 8.6 wins in our simulations. Remember, Cleveland last year was outscored by its opponents. Based on our DVOA ratings, Cleveland was the second worst 11-5 team ever. And some of that was like deeply packed into two early season games against the Ravens and the Steelers where they got just completely destroyed. But we went back and did research and we couldn't find any evidence that teams that had low ratings because they were destroyed in early games were better the following year than teams that had low ratings because they were just bad overall. So it's, you know, not impossible that the Browns could improve in DVOA to the point where they have a DVOA that is commensurate with 11 wins, but it's not completely likely. I mean, I know that they've added talent this year, but a lot of the defensive talent they've added, they also lost a lot of defensive talent. There's no more Sheldon Richardson. There's no more Larry Ogunjobi, no more Olivier Vernon. Everybody's expecting Jadeveon Clowney to come in and be the Jadeveon Clowney we all thought he was when he was taken number one overall, not the Jadeveon Clowney we've actually seen the last couple years.
Just for giggles, what was the worst 11-5 team per DVOA historically?
The 2012 Indianapolis Colts.
The 2012 Indianapolis Colts. I love the historical stuff with Aaron. Remember everyone, remember boys and girls, the 1991 Washington football team, the greatest team of all time, at least as far back as Football Outsiders go. Did we want to force another under, by the way, before we go to overs?
The other one I think I mentioned is the Tennessee Titans. What are they at right now on your lines?
Tennessee Titans, we have for the Titans, right? Boy, that's right. Last I saw was 10. What is it, guys, right now we're seeing on the Titans? What do we have on the Tennessee Titans? We'll call it up, but go ahead. What do you have on them?
I've seen both 9.5 and 10 for the Titans. Yeah. They average 8.2 wins in our... They average 8.2. Oh, this is 9. Okay,
yeah,
so it's not quite as good a bet, but at plus 115, that's kind of nice.
Yeah, I was going to say 9, but heavily juiced to the over at minus 140, yeah.
The Titans were 14th in DVOA last year, despite being 11-5, and they have the worst projected defense in the league by our numbers. And the offense, yes, they added Julio Jones, but they subtracted Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith. And they lost Arthur Smith, their offensive coordinator, who was a huge motivator behind the improvement of the offense 2 years ago. So we feel that that's a weak division overall. We think that's possible that the winner of that division is only going to have like 9 wins. So it might be Tennessee, but we have Tennessee as under.
Tennessee under, but definitely the third of the three, Chargers and Browns. A little more conviction from the Football Outsiders numbers. Let's shift to your favorite season win totals overs. And I caught the conversation between you and Jason, my producer, Jason Kahn. So I think I know where you're going with this. There it is. It flashes up on screen. The Minnesota Vikings, who are at 9 themselves, Aaron.
Okay, so that's a little higher than I had seen them at before, so this over is not quite as strong, but Minnesota has a lot of reasons to believe they're going to rebound this year. They were very bad last year in a lot of stats that tend to regress towards the mean. For example, special teams, injuries, particularly on defense, third downs compared to first and second down, like they were really bad on third, and that tends to regress towards your overall performance. So if you can get them at 8.5, I would rather do that than 9, but I do like Minnesota over this year.
All right, so if you can find it 8.5, the over, a little more tepid at the 9. All right, what's number 2 in the overs?
The New England Patriots.
Oh!
This is another one that I've seen at 9, and I'd rather take 9 than 9.5, but I would still go over on that 9.5. We have a stat that goes back in history and measures for defense, our defensive projections that measures defensive talent coming in and out of your team. And the Patriots this year have the most added defensive talent on net of any team since at least 2003. So we think their defense is going to rebound big time. Their offense probably will still be below average, but they have the easiest expected schedule in the league. So when you combine that with the likely improvement on defense, we like the over. But again, I'd rather take 9 than 9.5 because then you get the push at 9 and 8. But we like the over. We like the Patriots to make the playoffs and have a winning record this year.
You are a New England Patriots fan, by the way. People should know. He doesn't let his fanhood pollute his numbers. Is your sense from all of your intimacy with that franchise and your knowledge of Bill Belichick that he would start Mac Jones if he felt like it, or do you think it's going to be Cam week one?
Well, if he feels like it, but I mean, I think that Belichick, listen, we've never seen him with the rookie quarterback, right? So we don't have any experience with that. But in general, he has tended to not play rookies right away unless he really had to. So my guess is that Mac Jones comes in midseason. If Newton is playing well, then we may not see Mac Jones at all. If Newton gets hurt or Newton is mediocre, if Newton is dragging down a really good defense, I do not think that Belichick would hesitate to pull the plug and put in Mac Jones. But my guess is it's Newton week one.
I know how much you love preseason football talk, Aaron, but just because we're riffing here, Justin Fields had a great box score. Trey Lance had a great play. But other than that great play, wasn't all that great for the Niners. With the Niners, a team that's actually trying to win the Super Bowl, they're not starting Trey Lance to start the season, right? They're going Jimmy G.
I know that everybody feels like Lance is going to be an upgrade on Garoppolo, but the fact is that on average, rookie quarterbacks struggle. On average, they are below average. And Garoppolo is, you would have to project the 49ers with Garoppolo to be better than the 49ers with Lance. I know people feel like Lance is a better quarterback, and in the long run, I'm sure that Lance is a better quarterback, but in the short term, if you're just doing statistical projections, you can't project that a rookie will be better than what Garoppolo has been over the last couple of years, because Garoppolo's been in production,
right,
a top 12 quarterback. Maybe not in his abilities, but in that offense, he's been a top 12 quarterback.
And the Niners play the Lions and the Eagles to start the season. Like, you've got to bank those wins. You can't risk it with a rookie quarterback. You're trying to win the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, the other argument would be, well, those are fine defenses to start a rookie again. You don't want to have a rookie have his first game against the Rams, but sure, the Lions, that's fine.
Well, I think
I would still, if I'm trying to compete this year, I would go Garoppolo.
See, the distinction I make is that the Niners can actually compete for a title. And so I think you don't mess around. Whereas with the Bears, who are not, let's be realistic, competing for a title, newsflash.
No, you put Fields in right away.
Oh, you do put Fields right away. See, I was going to say, then you wait to week four, you let the Rams and the Browns clear, and you wait for the Lions week four.
First of all, the Browns defense is not probably as good as people think it is. Again, they lost a lot of people. They've added a lot of people, but they lost a lot of people. That was not a good defense last year. Maybe you want to keep him away from Aaron Donald, but to be honest, I feel like the psychological difference between starting him in week one versus starting him in week two is not that big. Just start the rookie from week one. Just start him in week one. Yeah. Will week one be tough? Sure. Just start him in week one.
I went week four, but I understand you're thinking. Interesting. Interesting that you went with Justin Fields week one. All right. I went off the grid there. So it's the Vikings and the Niners. One more season win total over.
The Las Vegas Raiders.
Oh, my goodness.
The most boring team in the National Football League.
Boring how? What do you mean? What do you mean?
Boring in every way other than the fans sitting in the end zone.
Yes.
They are slightly above average on offense. They are slightly below average on defense. Their schedule is very average. It should all add up to be very average. And very average is a sweet bet when you're getting over 7.
Al Davis would have loved your commentary there on it. His beloved franchise.
They should change the team colors to beige and off-white.
Beige it up. I was telling people on Primetime Action last night, I paid for a tour of Allegiant Stadium. By the way, it's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. But it was like, you know, obviously you're taking a tour of Allegiant Stadium. It's nothing but Raiders inundation from the tour guide. And it's so much, oh, silver and black, Raiders, Raiders. And on the way out, you know, we're wearing masks. So it was super brave of me because you couldn't really tell that I was saying it. On the way out, I say to him, you've been to one Super Bowl in 37 years. You know, just to just throw it back at the guy for a second because it was like, enough of this Raiders, Raiders talk for a while.
I don't see the Raiders sucking.
Okay.
I just think they're going to be very bland. And with an over of 7, bland is good.
Aaron Schatz with his most analytical comment ever. I don't see the Raiders sucking. That's the information we come for on this show. All right, Aaron, we have a minute left. Please tell everyone, first of all, you have your own football guide. How can people, there it is. Look at that. He was ready to go. Football Outsiders Almanac 2021. Oh, that is thick. Wow.
It is huge. It is huge. And you get it at Amazon by searching for Football Outsiders Almanac 2021. Or go to our site and become an FO Plus subscriber, and you get the electronic version along with picks against the spread during the season, our preseason fantasy draft tool, our in-season fantasy projections, a bunch of other fantasy tools to use during the season, and a historical stat database.
How did it get so thick this year, Aaron? What happened?
They're all that thick. They kill mosquitoes. They have two dual purpose. They help you win, and they kill mosquitoes.
I should have gotten the hard copy when I was in D.C. That would have helped. Last thing, because we only have 30 seconds here. The team that you project to maybe sneak in as a wild card in either the AFC or the NFC that would be the most surprising to folks.
Isn't that still Minnesota?
Okay, yeah, Minnesota's
is
the answer.
Is it New Orleans, given their quarterback situation?
I think it's New Orleans. I think it's New Orleans. That might surprise
a lot of
people.
Yeah, we love the New Orleans. Still, despite losing a couple of players, we still love the New Orleans team.
Let's get to Warren Sharp from Sharp Football Analysis and from Sharp Football Stats and the author of the 2021 Pro Football Guide from Sharp Football Analysis. It is the great Warren Sharp. How you doing, Warren?
Hey, Gil, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So great to talk to you. That means it's football season. There it is. There's a shot of your Sharp Football Analysis 2021 football preview. 462 pages, Warren. The fastest way to get smarter about the 2021 pro football season. Before we get to some of your favorite season win totals, let me just sort of ask you a random question. When you were doing the research for it this year, as you do every year, but what was the one sort of stat or revelation that even surprised you?
Oh, gosh, that's hard to pick a one stat. But what I can say is one of the things that stood out to me the most is how important good coaching is around the league. And if you look at it last season, the 2020 Browns recorded their first winning record since 2007. A big reason why the Bills won their first division championship since 1995, largely because of coaching. Those teams had the same quarterbacks. They had largely the same rosters. Coaching is one of the reasons why Frank Reich has cycled through Carson Wentz, Nick Foles, Jacoby Brissett, Andrew Luck, Phillip Rivers, and now who knows who he might have to start the season with in just a four-year span and is still getting production out of the Indianapolis Colts. It's a large reason why Tua looked so poor last season, and I think he stands for a rebound this year. It's why Drew Locke looked even worse than what he was, and I think Drew Locke needs a lot of work, but his coaching did him no favor. So I just think around the league, just as a blanket statement, coaching is massively important. As people watch the NFL games, casual fans, they tend to focus in on players and teams in general. They're fantasy-driven. They're looking at the quarterbacks or running backs or the number one wide receiver, and I think too many people gloss over the importance of coaching.
All right, well, so since the answer was coaching, let me one more question before we get to your season wins. Are you as horrified as an analytics guy by what you see from Dan Campbell in Detroit and maybe specifically comments from David Culley with the Houston Texans this past week?
Sadly, I'm not surprised, but yes, it's pretty gross. The fact of the matter is, you know, I get these coaches, they try to, after the fact, say, oh, well, we wanted to try some things. We were looking to do a couple of different things. Dan Campbell is not the offensive coordinator, okay? Dan Campbell is the guy who's going to say, let's go for it or let's not. So he's not the one actually calling those second and third down pass plays that are rollouts that, you know, oh, yeah, let's talk to the offensive coordinator real quick on the headset and tell him, let's go ahead and give some passing chances here so I can see more of it. No, like you need to. Then he comes back and says, well, we were trying to win the game, obviously. Well, no, you really weren't trying to win the game. If you understood strategy, he should have been there in the guy's headset saying, run the ball. We got to win this game and shorten it. But I just think in general, there are far too many coaches that think they know what they're talking about. The same thing with some of the comments from Ron Rivera as well. But the reality is they are probably going to make these same types of mistakes during the regular season. They're blaming it on looking at things in the preseason. Just wait till you see the regular season. I bet we're going to see some of those same things happen.
Talking to Warren Sharp, everybody, at Sharp Football on Twitter, one of the great football follows there is. And there, by the way, the host of The Sharp Edge. Welcome to Warren Sharp's World, available where all podcasts are distributed. Warren, let me ask you, season win total overs, what are your favorites? Let's start with the positivity.
Yeah, it's good. We got to sprinkle some positivity in here. It's early in the morning for you guys out there. Look, a team that I think has a high win total, but I'm not going to be deterred from going ahead and dabbling here, was the San Francisco 49ers. And one of the big reasons for me is A, Kyle Shanahan, when he's working with a number one quarterback, has shown that he can deliver results. The issue is he's 7-27 when he doesn't have his starting quarterback out in San Francisco. Now you have 1A, 1B. I think to start the season, Jimmy G is your 1A. But Jimmy G doesn't give you a high enough ceiling to march all the way through and win the Super Bowl against some of these bigger, better teams that exist in the NFL right now. So you're eventually going to transition to 1B, who Trey Lance is going to give you that higher ceiling. But the floor that Jimmy G enters the season with is substantially higher than Trey Lance. You need to knock out some of these wins early on your schedule. That's the way I see the quarterback rotation going. But, Gil, the only team to rank top 10 in, I have a custom analytic, we've discussed it many times, early down success rate. It doesn't just look at success rate on early downs. It's looking more so at bypassing third downs or forcing offenses into third down when you're on defense. The only team to rank top 10 both offense and defense last year was the San Francisco 49ers, despite the fact that they didn't have Jimmy G in there for most of the time. So I love the quarterback redundancy that they have, that they can fall back on Trey Lance if they need to. I like the fact that they can pivot to him later in the season to get a higher ceiling. I think we're going to have some better schedule regression. If you look at the difficulty of past defenses that Kyle Shanahan's offenses have faced since he's been in San Francisco, it's been brutal. It's been one of the most difficult schedules of any team in the NFL. Right now, I show them playing the 26th most difficult schedule of past defenses. So it should be much easier on their quarterbacks as well. And there's some other reasons, but I do think San Francisco, if I'm going to take a team that has a high total, I think this is a team. Everybody's talking about the Rams. But I like the 49ers coming out of that division.
And totally agree with you about the fact that you got to bank those wins early. If you're a team like the Niners that's trying to win a Super Bowl, you can't mess with Lance the first few games at the very least, right? Get Jimmy G in there, make sure you get the wins banked, and then maybe go from there and do things differently. So San Francisco, even at 10.5, do you like it? Obviously 10 would be better if you could find that, but 10.5, you'd even play it?
Yeah, I would. I mean, look, I always like to adjust my unit sizing based upon what I'm risking. And so obviously, depending upon what your half a win is worth and where you can shop that, then yes, I would definitely prefer 10. But taking 10.5 at plus money, you know, you scale down how much you're risking on that a tiny bit. I think that there's some edge there.
All right. Of course, the Niners open up at the Lions on September 12th and then follow up at the Eagles the following week in week two. All right. San Francisco over. One more over, or maybe even two more, whatever you got here. What's the next over?
Well, I actually, one that I want to make sure that we dig into a little bit, Gil, is the Saints. And I don't like them over. They're actually an underplay for me. But I do want to discuss some of the logic as to why, because I think it's pretty interesting the way that I am coming to this. Okay, the simple answer is, well, they don't have Drew Brees anymore, and so they're likely to regress. Well, why are they going to regress? Well, here's like the snowball's direction as to how things fall apart, even if your quarterback play is somewhat reasonable. Okay, it's going to start with the play calling, because on early downs with Drew Brees, Sean Payton had a ton of confidence to throw the football. And regardless of who the quarterback is going to be, there is going to be less confidence in them throwing the football. Thus, they're going to run the ball more on early downs. And you and I both know what happens when you run the ball more on early downs. It's impossible to produce the same amount of efficiency to bypass as many third downs and to get yourself into third down and short when you need to as frequently. So you're going to wind up in more third downs, and you're going to wind up in third downs that have a longer average yards to go. What this is going to mean is that whoever the quarterback is going to be in more obvious passing situations. They're not going to be able to execute nearly as well on those third downs. They're not going to have as high of a conversion rate. They are going to take more sacks. And they are ultimately going to turn the ball over more often than Drew Brees did. And the result of more turnovers and more sacks and worse performance on third down inevitably is going to make this offense, in my view, significantly less efficient than it was at any point in time during Drew Brees' seasons, even last season when Drew Brees wasn't throwing the ball down the field quite as often. And I think that just has a ripple effect throughout the team. And that's why I think they do take a step back. I actually think the Carolina Panthers have a decent shot, you know, an outside puncher's chance of finishing number two in this division, which you can get at plus money. You can bet on Carolina to finish number two in this division. So if you do want to like push me in the corner and ask for another over, that might be a team that I'd be interested in dabbling with. But I think the Saints will take a slight step back here, and that'll open the door to somebody else in that division. And I think that that's where Carolina could end up slipping in there if they have a great season and if Sam Darnold ends up working out for them. So to be determined. We haven't even seen him in the preseason yet.
Yeah, to be determined for sure. We were just talking about that last night on Primetime Action, which I did with Matt Brown and Kelly Bidlin on MSG Plus. Like, what is the Carolina leash, do you think, on a guy like Sam Darnold? In other words, the depth chart is with P.J. Walker and with Will Greer as well. And so you really do wonder what, you know, is it 5 weeks? Would they go half a season? And you know, what is your sense of that with the newly acquired Sam Darnold this offseason?
Yeah, I just think that their direction, they chose to, hey, we're not going to roll out a quarterback. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be, you know, in the draft, we're going to be going with attacking through free agency, and we're going to be going up and grabbing a quarterback who has had arguably the worst coaching in his career. If you remember when Sam Darnold was drafted, he was the youngest player to make a week one start at quarterback in NFL history. He did not have Adam Gase as his first year coach. It was a different staff, but his offensive coordinator was a guy named Jeremy Bates. And his he's not even coaching right now. His strategies were horrible. And then to have to go from Jeremy Bates to Adam Gase, I mean, talk about like just not even a positive upgrade there. Adam Gase was horrific as well. And I think they said, look, we liked some of his traits coming out of college. We're scouting him again. We think we can fix him a little bit. I think the leash is going to be somewhat long. The Carolina Panthers aren't going anywhere, in my opinion, with P.J. Walker. Like, I don't see P.J. Walker as, like, the guy that they think could take them and be potentially their franchise quarterback. This is their potential franchise quarterback, Sam Darnold. If Sam doesn't work out, they're drafting a quarterback in the next draft, in my opinion. So they want to give him as long a leash as possible. This is just my pure speculation, to see what he can do with this offense and to get experience. That's why I do actually wish, Gil, that he played in the first preseason game.
Yeah.
I need to see him with live reps. I want to see him make those adjustments at the line of the scrimmage, be able to read the defense so that then they can go back on film. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's still the first preseason game. Make these corrections in film study with the staff under live fire, right? Like, and you don't get that when you're just walking through and doing things in training camp. So I really hope that they get him a little bit more live experience soon.
Yeah, and so over on San Francisco, under on the Saints, Carolina maybe a second place wager on them in the NFC South. I won't hold you to another season win total. And by the way, there's one last thing about Carolina. There is the Deshaun Watson thing that's out there. That's also part of a, you know, again, very abstract. But just that's also sort of lurking in the background, maybe not at the beginning of the season, maybe halfway through the season. We have no idea what's going to happen with Deshaun. But Carolina, one of the few possible landing spots. So that's also, you know, a layer to that as well. Last thing here, Warren, because we only have a couple minutes. Is there another bet? It doesn't have to be a season win total, but is there something else out there that you love?
You know, look, I'll say this. I've been writing these articles for NBC Edge and doing videos for them, which I love getting some videos out there and posting them on my Twitter and on their Twitter accounts. And walking through the win total market, there just isn't nearly as much value this season as I found in years past. I think the odds makers, there were a couple of bets that they jumped in front of early to reduce some team totals that I would have clearly screamed out, this is regression spots in a number of categories, and I want to look to bet the under. And so I'm just worried that there are other bettors out there that might have looked at those and said, oh, well, this team screams regression and bet the under, much like they did for the Green Bay Packers of 2020, whose 2019 season screamed that they should have regression off of a 13-win season, but the line that the oddsmakers posted was very short, and of course they went over that again. I'm actually turning my focus now a little bit more into kind of the team prop market. The player prop market. I do see some opportunities there. I just have to get all of my ducks in a row with, you know, trying to talk to some of the people that I work with around the league and get on the right page there. But I do think one, I'll just toss out to you. I think there's some edges for a guy like Gerald Everett in Seattle, who was handpicked to come over there as a tight end with their new offensive coordinator. And I think there's a lot of upside. I think his touchdown mark is 4. I think he could exceed 4 touchdowns. It's tricky to bet over player props in a 17-game season just with the injuries in the longer season. But he's the type of guy, I think, that will mesh really well with Russell Wilson and what their new OC is looking to do in the red zone and could exceed 4 receiving touchdowns.
All right, Warren, the Sharp Edge from NBC Sports. Welcome to Warren Sharp's World. Of course, the 2021 football preview, the Sharp Football Analysis, 2021 football preview, all that information at Sharp Football. Anything else we're leaving out here as we go to break? The Ringer NFL Show, of course. What else? Consultant to NFL teams. What else do you do, Warren?
I think you covered it, Gil. Okay. Great talking to you as always.
My man, Warren Sharp, everybody, kind enough to join us this morning. We bring in Drew Dinsick from NBC Sports, Bet the Edge Pod, and the Deep Dive Podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. Drew, how you doing, man? Looking good.
Thanks. You too. Welcome back, man.
It's been a while. Been a while. Yeah. Well, let's start there. So I'll start with the Jaguars question. Does any of that make you want to take a nibble on the Jags?
We might have to go into the numbers game time machine here. Go back in time to when the Colts signed Carson Wentz and find that clip of when I said, this makes me want to bet the Jaguars.
Yes.
And honestly, this makes me want to wait and probably bet the Colts. I mean, I think there is an upside here ultimately for the Colts if they take this opportunity to kind of rethink their strategy at quarterback. Obviously, if they go with Eason, forget about it. If they stick with their current roster, forget about it. But there's some very, you know, serviceable quarterbacks out there who are currently second on depth charts, namely, you know, Marcus Mariota, you know, namely Gardner Minshew in division. Similarly, Tyrod Taylor may be available in division if it turns out Watson can play 17 games. We haven't even talked about Jimmy Garoppolo, who looks like he may be losing the quarterback battle in San Francisco. So there is kind of a wide range of available quarterbacks through trade that I think would have been an upgrade over what you were going to get from Carson Wentz this season. And I got personally burned so many times betting on the Eagles last year, sort of in that middle stretch of the season where I thought like, okay, they're getting a little healthier. If Wentz can, you know, he's getting a little better protection. The wide receivers are coming back. The tight ends are still there. The offense is still the same. And it just never clicked with him. He made game-changing losing plays in the red zone so regularly that when they finally pulled the switcheroo with that and put Hurts in there, like my initial reaction was, you know, why didn't the coaches do this sooner? Hurts was so obviously the better quarterback of those two options, just because he wasn't making the game ending, game losing negative plays. So I think ultimately this is, this has potential to give the Colts a chance to redo things and maybe do it better. The Jaguars were a play for me when they were about 11 to one. And there are some places out there, I feel like you can still find it in the 12 to one range.
Yeah. Hasn't really moved dramatically. Yeah.
And when I made the play, it was pre-draft. There are two things I was thinking were, well, the Colts made the wrong decision trying to solve their quarterback issue. The Titans are going to be way worse than people expect this season because they lose Art Smith and they have a humongous issues with the way that this offense is going to be conceived, especially if they lean on Derrick Henry, who's 2 years in a row of 400 plus touches. So, this is not spelling good things for the top of the board in the AFC South. So somebody's got to win this division. Why not the long shots? They're going to take Trevor Lawrence. They have a bunch of other draft capital. I wasn't super thrilled with how they use their other draft capital. I haven't been super thrilled about anything that Urban Meyer has done so far in his era as head coach. So I'm holding the ticket on the Jags at 11-1 when the South, and I don't feel great about it all of a sudden. So I'm kind of hoping the Colts do something cool. And, I really have eyes for Marcus Mariota for this team. I feel like that would be the best fit.
You know who would have been fabulous? Jacoby Brissett would have been fabulous, but he's away now. He's
Ryan
a Dolphin.
Patrick.
Yeah.
Ryan Fitzpatrick would have put this team in contention for an AFC South. So,
Jason,
yeah, there's yeah.
Jason just whispered in my ear. Andrew Luck would have been awesome. True as well. Of course, Johnny Unitas comes to mind as well. So last thing about this, and I just try to think outside of the box. There are some markets where you can see some books have markets best record in the regular season, worst record in the regular season. So I'm always thinking, but apparently the books are thinking as well. That's the problem with this racket. DraftKings pulled the worst record market yesterday before I could get to it or before I could even cite the number. I know our buddy Jason Weingarten has a 200-1 on the Colts with the worst record. I'm not sure why he bet that when he did, but he did. What number would it take for you when it does return to bet that? Is there even an inkling there where that could be something you'd pull a trigger on?
Well, I think Spreadopedia bet it because he probably feels about Wentz the way I feel about Wentz, which is that he could drive this team into the ditch. But, at this point, there's probably not a number just because... I would take 200-1 if
sure.
they hang that again.
Of course.
They're probably going to reopen that in like the 50-1 range.
Maybe, I would imagine. Yeah.
Maybe 25-1 even. So I think the value's probably lost there. The Colts have enough amazing pieces outside of the quarterback and on this team in general. And are they pieces that you want to win in the NFL in 2021? Not really. Do you really want one of the best guards in football? Do you really want, one of the best defensive, three technique guys in football? Not really. These are kind of the positions that, that are sort of gravy as opposed to really where you want your blue chip guys located on the football field. There's promise in the wide receiving core. There's talent in the secondary. There's talent at the linebacker position for these guys. They have the potential to produce an edge rush. They should be able to be a consistent team that's in every game with a coach. They have a top five coach, in my opinion, in Frank Reich. And he not just top five in terms of scheme and ability to sort of manage a team, but what he does in game decision making is among the best in the NFL, in my opinion. He knows when to go for it. He knows when to to cut his losses. And I think he's shown the ability to really kind of be the guy to steer a ship. And, even if the Colts have a terribly under impressive season this season, I mean, Frank Reich is clearly the answer at head coach for the Colts, and he'll get them some extra wins. He'll get them some covers. And, I guess my general temperature at this point is I hope that the market overreacts to whatever the Colts do and that there's some betting value on them, because I think there's a potential upside here with Wentz going down.
Always a step ahead. That's what you got to be in sports betting. So, okay. pretty thorough about the AFC South. Let's just go division to division. We don't have to do all of them, but we'll try to get as many as we can rapid fire here. And just your, and I won't confine it to season wins. I won't confine it to win the division. Whatever you think might be the best bet per division. Let's start with the AFC East. Is there a team angle that you love more than any other?
Man, the AFC East is tricky because I think ultimately the Bills are the clear choice. However, the way that they start their season, I think you could probably do better if you wait a little bit than you fire away into a minus 150 right now for them to win the South. So I'm gonna plan my market entry on the Bills till about, you know, maybe after week five. They play the Chiefs week five. You know, I don't know that they have enough firepower to beat the Chiefs. They'll be in that game. But I feel like, you know, they have a tough ask to go down to Miami week two, play in the heat. They have a tough ask week one. I mean, you don't want to play the Steelers early in the season when they're fully healthy. You know, that's going to be a much closer game than the market thinks, in my opinion. I'm happily, you know, going to probably end up taking whatever the biggest point spread we get for the Steelers in that one. And so, you know, I can see a little bit of an underwhelming start for this team. And I could see the price drift down a bit for this Bills team because teams like the Patriots have a really soft start to their schedule. Teams, mm-hmm. You know, even the Dolphins, if they get that head-to-head win week two, you know, all of a sudden, you know, they're probably favorites to win the AFC East, and I think you pounce on the Bills there. So I'm being a little tentative, being a little patient on the AFC East, waiting for a Bills price that I think is fair.
This is such a great point, though, and we need to stop here and just seize on it for 1 second. What you just said. I used to talk about it a little bit on air and on the podcast, on the Beating the Book podcast. I used to participate in this off the grid, quite frankly, not above board, dynamic NFL season win totals stock market thing that used to adjust every week. And this was before sportsbooks offered adjusted season win totals. Now they do. Like, we take it for granted that, oh, yeah, DraftKings will keep posting, adjusted season win totals as the season progresses. But 3-4 years ago, they didn't do this.
Sure.
And what that exercise taught any one of us who was participating, more than anything, was exactly what you just said, which is we can talk ad nauseum about these bets here before the season starts. But there is there is such a strategic value in analyzing the schedule and waiting for the optimal time to make a bet on a certain team. Buy low, sell high. It is just like any other market. And I think we have to drive that point home as much as humanly possible. And then you also have to be prepared that if your strike price doesn't happen, let's say the Bills were to beat the Chiefs, just to use your example, you have to be okay with just letting it go.
You nailed it. nailed it. Yes, you do not. There is more where you're paying a vig to make any of these bets. And there is inherently value in not making the bet just on that basis. And so the idea of waiting for a specific price, considering the sequencing of some of these team schedules, and if it doesn't manifest, it doesn't manifest. That is kind of 101 in my futures yep. portfolio philosophy right now. And it goes towards pretty much everything I would tell anyone in sort of as you consume season long previews, people will make pitches or, you know, they'll have, you know, be bullish on team X, Y, or Z. You know, like you absolutely have to think of it much more in the context of, okay, well, I'm going to try to corner this market over the course of the season. If you get the high point on four or five teams in the AFC, namely Bills, Browns, Ravens, Chiefs, and, you know, one other one, pick your favorite of the remaining teams there. You want to pick the high point on those five or, you know, five teams in the AFC. You will do a negative hold.
Oh yeah.
If you get them at the right time.
For
and
sure.
That's the name of the game. You do not want to be staring at your futures divisional weekend and saying, "Oh my god, I got to hedge myself out of these positions because if this team wins, I lose all of these," right? I mean, like that's kind of the approach I feel like you have to take if you're going to take the, you know, play the futures market seriously.
Nothing more valuable will be stated here today. Seriously. Let's try to get through the other two AFC divisions. The AFC North, same sort of open-ended question. Whatever market, what do you think is the best bet on the board? Are you bullish on the Browns? Are you bearish on the Steelers? Where do you stand on everything?
Steelers are going to be a bet on team early in the season. They have a soft start to the schedule, and the market is way, way, way cooler on them than is warranted considering how healthy they'll be relative to the way they finished last season. Similarly, the Browns, I think, are a bet on the Browns are a bet now kind of a team. They play the Chiefs week one. They're live in that game. If they beat the Chiefs week one, you look at their next eight games, they could be 9-1. You know, 10 weeks into the season. At that point, a Baker Mayfield MVP ticket isn't what it is today. A Browns to win the AFC ticket isn't what it is today. I don't know that I'm going so far as to say the Browns are going to win the Super Bowl, but you know, there are for sure a lot of sort of longer prices are on around AFC, around Mayfield, that if this, you know, because the schedule breaks so clearly in their favor after week one, that I think you have to get some Browns exposure now. I don't think you're going to, I think those prices are only going one way. And it's a team that's deep, you know, they have resilience. They're not relying. You're not even counting on Baker Mayfield taking a meaningful step forward. And this team's going to be able to win games just the way that they're coached and the way that they're rostered. And I think people are overlooking the depth factor and the fact that they're a little resilient to injury. And I guess even though I love everything about what the Ravens do as an organization, effectively, I'm saying fade the Ravens. And some of that is, you know, I'm not actively fading them. I'm not attacking the wins market under things like that. I think ultimately they'll be in the conversation at the end of this season. I don't love the way that the middle of their schedule looks. There's going to be a point here where they go Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Green Bay. Then they get Cincinnati, Rams, Pittsburgh to wind things down. I mean, they're going to be battle tested come playoff time. They may be a good bet, but this is a team that I think only gets into the playoffs as a wild card. I have a very tough time constructing a path to victory for them for the AFC North. So I think of the prices that are out there now, Browns to win the AFC North, I think is a fair play at +150. And then again, AFC, I got them at a pretty reasonable price that I think is going to come in pretty quickly, especially if the Browns beat Cleveland week one, then, you know, you've captured an enormous amount of equity right there. And I do think they're alive in that game.
If the Browns beat the Chiefs game one. Yeah.
Yes.
Same thing.
Yes.
AFC West, obviously dominated by the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes saying out loud, yeah, I think we can go 20-0 or whatever it is. He wasn't even sure and really counted up the regular season and postseason games. What's the best bet on the board right now in the AFC West as you see it?
Yeah. I want to be cold on this Chiefs team. I want to say that the Super Bowl hangover is going to be real and they're going to feel it and they're going to underwhelm and they're going to come in below expectations. And this team is, you know, is primed for some overdue regression. I don't have a strong reason to say that considering the way that this roster is constructed, aside the fact that they still have, you know, huge question marks on defense. But the way that their schedule is sequenced is not really favorable in terms of getting off to a good start for the season. You start out with Cleveland and Baltimore back to back. You got the Chargers week three. That's a live offense that can go score for score with you. You got Buffalo week five. That's a live offense that can go score for score with you. So, you know, four of your first five games are going to be, you know, coin flip, dogfight type of games. And if your team is at all resting on their laurels, is at all kind of the mindset of the Chiefs that we saw down the home stretch of last season, which was, we'll figure out a way to win this at the end. We don't need to win with margin. We don't need to put these games away. You know, we can let teams back into it. Like if that's still sort of the mindset and the way that this team is operating on a game to game basis, then the Chiefs might find themselves in a little bit of a hole early in the season. The schedule completely flips for them after week five. So I think realistically, the Chiefs, you have to be patient and you fire away on some, you know, Mahomes MVP, some Chiefs AFC, maybe even some Chiefs Super Bowl after week five.
Yeah. And remember, that was the theme about the Chiefs last year. It's like they're lollygagging through all these games. And we were worried, is that a thing or are they just not caring? Well, we saw how the season ended anyway. By the way, 6-1 on the Broncos to win the West and 25-1 on the Raiders at DraftKings. Wow. Interesting. All right, let's talk about the National Football League and the National Football Conference. We did this kind of in the AFC last week. You and I were kind enough to, you know, we went through every division, and we didn't really go team by team. I just sort of left it like, okay, what's the best bet in this division, whether it's a season win total, whether it's a, you know, to win a division future, whatever the case may be. And let's start in the NFC East, obviously a division where the winner has changed hands for, better part of two decades now, year after year after year, not quite two decades, but since the early aughts if you will. Washington, obviously, being the defending champ. Washington, Dallas, the Giants, and the Eagles. Dak Prescott, obviously, coming back for the Cowboys. We'll see what shape he's in post-traumatic injury. Those are the two teams at the top of that division, largely considered by the markets. And there's the Giants. A lot of handicappers that you and I know high on the Giants. Not sure if you're on that page. And then there's the Eagles. A lot of question marks, obviously, with Jalen Hurts there. What's the best bet on this board? Is it a season win? Is it a division? Is it an NFC? What is it?
Yeah, I honestly, I think you have to stay away from this one entirely for now. This one is one that I think you're not going to capture any meaningful value betting into this division market today or any day before the season starts. And the reason is the schedule for all four of these teams within division is incredibly backloaded. I think, you know, you have six, obviously you have six divisional foes on your 17 game schedule. And for the most part, I think all four teams play five of their six games in the waning weeks of the season. Washington football team, great example. Their last five games are Dallas, Philly, Giants. You know, so that right there, that tells you that, you know, the way to play this division is, wait, and then we'll shoot for a long shot once we kind of understand health, once we understand, you know, what path to victory is for a couple of these teams, like around Thanksgiving. And realistically, in my gut, Washington should be closer to the favorite here. I think they have the most complete team, but Washington's schedule is absolutely as difficult as you can find across the entire NFL this year, especially through the first 12 weeks. They have only one game where they are a meaningful favorite, and it is week two against the Giants. They are 3-point favorites. Every other game on their schedule until you get to week 14 against Dallas, they are underdogs. And that is, I don't think that's because the market is shy on this team. It's literally just their schedule is absolutely grueling. And so I think the right look here, let Washington take their lumps. Let them, let people kind of decide, oh, this team was the frauds we expected them to be last week, and then scoop up some valuable price on them to win the NFC East come Thanksgiving. Because ultimately, there are things to like, surely, about the Washington football team relative to last year's team. I mean, they upgraded the quarterback position. They've upgraded a couple of, a couple of offensive skill positions. Their defense, it lost a couple of pieces, but not enough that you would think that they take a humongous step backwards. But last year's schedule for Washington was relatively soft. And last year they caught a lot of teams by surprise because, they were able to play relatively safe football with Alex Smith behind center. And it's going to be a very different kind of offense and a very different look from this team this year. And I don't see them being able to go out there and go score for score with teams like Buffalo, teams like Kansas City, teams like Green Bay, all of which they play in the first 7 weeks. So it's going to be pretty, important, I think, to wait on a team like the Washington football team. And then the rest of the teams in this division, I don't think have realistic shots of making the playoffs if they don't win the East. I think the Eagles really are struggling right now to find their offense. Every report out of camp has been, even the ones that are trying to be glossy and positive have been pretty disappointing. Similarly, the Giants under Jason Garrett are never a team that I'm running to the window to back. This is, the marriage between Garrett and Daniel Jones, and expecting that to somehow manifest, 25 to 30 points a game is absolutely insane in my mind. So, the Giants are going to have to get it done with defense. And now if you're going to tell me that we're going to look up halfway through the season and everybody consensus is going to say the Giants have a top 10 defense, I would entirely buy into that. I think this defense is very, very, very talented. They don't have any obvious holes to me. I think the coordinator is worth, giving a lot of credit to. But Jason Garrett and this Giants offense is going to struggle to score points this year. And if they turn over the ball, if they give away, fumble sixes, pick sixes, free points on, to the opposing team's defense, then this Giants team is not going to win very many football games. And similarly, this Cowboys, I know that they invested a ton in the draft in trying to be able to be a better run stopping unit. And I think that ultimately that gets them to sort of the Mendoza line of how good your defense is. Like it's not so bad that you don't have a chance to win a game. But this team is going to find themselves in a lot of deficits and they're going to have to throw their way back in. That's going to require the offensive line staying perfectly healthy. It's going to require Dak Prescott giving us his best, what we've ever seen him give him. And so I think ultimately the Cowboys are a team that you're going to want to maybe play live at halftime if they're, you know, if they have a deficit, play live in games if they're down a touchdown, because, you know, they're going to be able to stop the run effectively enough that it'll give them a chance in games, but they're not going to run away from anyone in this league because the defense can be passed on. So these are all flawed teams in my eyes, and realistically, we're not going to know who's coming through with the fourth seed in the NFC until after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I mean, so much good in there. The Cowboys, maybe a halftime bet on team, but again, the biggest point, I think, and we talked about this last week, and I just we can't stress it enough. You don't have to bet. It's a new day in betting. You don't have to bet these things at the beginning of the season. There are no extra points for being a hero, especially with the way these particular teams, the NFCs, the way their schedules are stacked. There's probably an NFC East bet to be made way down the road. And again, that Washington schedule, as you point out, it's brutal early. You know, Chargers at home, at Buffalo, Kansas City, at Green Bay. I mean, there's tons of games. Tampa Bay, Seattle. Yeah. I mean, on and on and on. But this is how they close. And this is the quirkiest thing ever in the history of NFL schedules. Dallas at Philly, at Dallas, Philly. Like, it just never happened. By the way, the Giants after that. It's never happened before that you play. It's always rare to see a team play another team twice in a three-week span, let alone it happening twice back-to-back like that. And that's what Washington has. Anyway, always a good answer when the answer, by the way, sometimes the best bets are the bets not made. And so that's a very sort of disciplined way to look at the NFC East, at least at this point.
Keep your powder dry.
Yeah, absolutely. NFC North, we will have Aaron Rodgers in the NFC North with the Green Bay Packers. Obviously, it's a Packers-Vikings division with apologies to the Andy Dalton-led Bears. At least that's what they're letting you know. Matt Nagy has decided to tell us that's what's going to happen at the beginning of the season with the Bears. And then there's the Lions, who could be epically bad. How do you see this? Best bet.
I mean, I think the market is too cold on the Lions, but that doesn't mean go run out and bet them to win this division. Ultimately, the Lions have a couple of strengths. Their offensive line looks strong. Their defensive secondary should take a meaningful step forward because they got a lot of youth. They have now a good defensive coordinator to kind of coach those guys up. So I think Lions are going to be in more games than you think. And if you're getting, you know, if you it's going to be one of those teams where if you're betting against them, you're going to want to tease against them. Because they're gonna lose a lot of coin flips, right? This isn't gonna be a team that gets absolutely, you know, stomped like we have seen in years past of the teams that are truly tanking. Because guess what? They put a pretty decent infrastructure around a team that is missing a quarterback and is missing wide receivers, and so they're not gonna be able to go score for score with teams, but they're gonna be able to hang in there. And so I think it's gonna be a fun team to bet on in general over the course of the season if you're getting enough points. Similarly, I think the Bears are gonna be a super, super fun team to bet on pregame a lot of weeks because I think there is a very clear read on this team, and that is their offensive line is horrific, and they have currently under center a quarterback who cannot perform the job of quarterback when he's under duress. And so if they are going up against a team with a strong pass rush, the Bears are going to score under 20 points. If they are going up against a team with a mediocre or a poor pass rush, the Bears are going to hang in there. If they're going up against a team that has a poor offensive line themselves, the Bears should be able to generate pressure and dictate the game with their defense. And so this is kind of, at least until we see what Justin Fields is and we see him get inserted into the starter role, which, by the way, it looks like week four, if you ask me, this is a team that has a relatively low ceiling in terms of offense. And it has to have sort of the right recipe in terms of who they match up against in order to get a win. And so I think it's going to be a lot of fun to either pick under spots, or pick some spots to back the Bears, depending on who they match up against in terms of strengths and weaknesses. Like the week five matchup against the Raiders looks absolutely super tasty. Like you could probably have the Bears lose to the Rams. Maybe they struggle and get a win against the Bengals, lose to the Browns. And at that point they pull the rug on Andy Dalton. Then it's Justin Fields time. He has a hard fought win against a frisky Lions team. And then maybe you're getting a reasonably, favorable price against the Raiders, where at that point, the Bears D line should dictate that game. And the Raiders don't have enough of a pass rush that they're going to be able to fluster Justin Fields. And, Fields should go, have a heyday. So, there's perfect spots kind of all throughout this schedule to back the Bears. I would be fading the Bears against the Bucks and the Niners at any price. And I'd back the Bears against the Steelers in that little 3-week stretch right there. Like, you're probably going to get a huge price with the Bears against the Steelers team. And again, if they can, Fields at that point is navigating the pocket a little bit better when it's collapsing, when the pressure's coming, then I think that team can do pretty well against the Steelers team that also has a poor offensive line. So the Bears, I think, I'm not running to the window to back them in the division, but I see a lot of opportunities looking at the schedule to either back or fade or look for an underspot.
We came up with the exact same conclusion you did on Primetime Action about when Justin Fields will be starting, and it's completely week four versus the Lions. Let the Rams clear, let the Browns clear, yes. And then say to Andy Dalton, hey, appreciate you being in those games, and Justin Fields takes over with the Lions in week four. We'll talk a little bit about the Vikings, the Packers on top of that division, what Drew feels about that. We'll do the NFC South and the NFC West. We'll get through it. We promise you. More with Drew Dytsick from the Deep Dive podcast and the Bet the Edge podcast. And we'll get some tennis thoughts from him, if he has any, here in Toronto and Montreal, both the men's and ladies tour with the Rogers Cup north of the border in a 1,000 event. We'll do that next as well, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It's a numbers game. I got my tennis picks as well, including one big dog on the way. Alexander Drew Dytsick, kind enough to join us this morning at @whale_capper. Deep Dive podcast with Andy Molitor, Bet the Edge podcast from NBC Sports. By the way, Drew, you referred to Jason Garrett as Jason Garrett, I believe, last segment. That's a no-no. Please refer to him as coach from here on out.
Oh, excuse me.
He prefers that.
The Clapper.
Yeah, the Clapper. That's one of Lombardi's greatest nicknames ever, the Clapper. Yeah. The Clapper. Vikings and Packers at the top of the division. How do you see that?
I don't have a great read on the Vikings at all. I know people are expecting this defense with the returning players to be like top five NFL. I'm not seeing them being that good. So there's probably some opportunity to kind of fade that market price. But ultimately I'm not buying into a Kirk Cousins led offense, and I'm not buying into a run first offense with this Minnesota team, considering the weakness of the offensive line. So I'm probably staying away from the Vikings entirely and just letting them kind of finish around 500 and missing the playoffs. Green Bay also, I'm relatively cool on their market price. Right now they're in general the market with Aaron Rodgers returning. They're pricing them like they're almost as good as Tampa Bay. I'm not close to that. I have Tampa Bay as meaningfully favorite over Green Bay in a head-to-head on a neutral. So I'm probably looking for opportunities to fade Green Bay. Realistically, I'm not betting into their to win the NFC price. I'm not betting into their NFC North price, because week 5 through week 12 for them is utter chaos. It is an absolutely brutal stretch, one of the toughest of any teams in the NFL through that middle portion of the season. They have 4 of 5 on the road, winding up with a game at Kansas City. Then they follow up having to play both Seattle and the Rams coming off of their byes, and then sandwiched in the middle a game at Minnesota. So, five games in 7 weeks in a row on the road with 2 home games against teams coming off their byes, forget about it. That they probably emerge around Thanksgiving, coming out of their bye, somewhat underpriced at that point. If you want to grab them to win the NFC, then they probably sneak in as the NFC North champions and as the 3 seed. But then they're going to have to play a really tough wild card team at home in the playoffs, and then go on the road and win 2 playoff games just to get to the Super Bowl. So ultimately, I'm out on the Packers this year.
Yeah, this is the way to view the NFL here in August. It's to parse the schedule up and to think of different ways, strategies to bet teams, teasing against the Lions, that the Bears might be a good bet on team in the weeks that we talked about. These are the real insights that I'm looking for. NFC South, Tampa Bay, the defending Super Bowl champions, ruling the roost here, one would think. Atlanta, Carolina, on down the line here in the NFC South as well. What do you see in this division where, I don't know, we'll show the board here with all the bets that are available to us. Obviously, the Saints are in there too, and the Saints now with a quarterback change, the Drew Brees era has ended. Some form of Jameis and Taysom Hill here. What's the best bet on this board, or what's a strategy?
I think our strategy really is, when we talked about the AFC, the glowing theme, I think, is just overall strength. Not a lot of surprises, not a lot of really true unknowns. At the end of the day, I think in the AFC, we know who is going to be in the mix come week 2 of the playoffs. In the NFC, that's not true. You have Tampa Bay, who, in my opinion, is clearly, clearly on a path to get the #1 overall seed. And then everything else is going to shake out in a way that has lots of uncertainty and lots of conditional probability. Like, you need guys to hit, you need players to emerge, you need coaches to coach well. And, you know, a lot of those questions we don't know the answers to yet. The Buccaneers are the one thing in the NFC that stands out as an absolute no doubter they will be in the mix. And it's on the basis of two factors. Number one, they have the deepest team in the NFC and it's not close. They bring back the entire roster last year that won the Super Bowl. On top of now, you saw that offense come together and get better and become more cohesive as the season went on. The likelihood that that carries into the season, I think, is high. And they have a very soft start to their schedule. Realistically, the first 7 weeks, they probably go 7-0. I really don't see them having a tough test until you get later into the season. So betting the Bucs at this point to win the Super Bowl, win the NFC, and Tom Brady to win MVP, I think all those numbers come in as we go through the first half of the season.
Wow. And then I guess clearly -190 to win the division as well. Interesting that
let's go for the bigger numbers.
Bigger numbers, yeah. Okay. You don't want the -190. Okay. Interesting that the Rams were not considered there to be a threat. We'll find that out next with Drew. One more segment. We'll do the NFC West, see how he feels about the Rams, and get some tennis thoughts. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Gil Alexander, Drew Dinsick from Bet the Edge and Deep Dive podcast is here. It occurs to me, Drew, this probably should have been a podcast because it's tough to squeeze all this in on the radio side. First of all, do you bet preseason at all?
I have some friends that destroy some of the numbers, and if I catch wind of what those bets are, I'll play them, but I don't handicap it myself.
Yeah, that's where I am. Okay. Anything else in the South before we get to the West? Anything else you wanted to point out?
I mean, somebody in this division is going to sneak up and steal a good. They're going to surprise. They're going to win 10 games. They're going to get a wild card. I'm not sure who that is. I took some shots on Art Smith, Coach of the Year for Atlanta, because I feel like if it's Atlanta, he's going to get the lion's share of the credit for that. And then you get a 30-1 instead of whatever Atlanta to make the playoffs is like +200 or something. You know, so you get a much better payday if Atlanta surprises betting Coach of the Year than you do, any other way of attacking that. But that the rest of that, somebody is going to emerge. I can't really tell you who. I have good friends that think it's absolutely the Panthers. I have some people thinking that the world is sleeping on the Saints. I happen to think the Falcons, in just because they have an offense I believe in, are the right side there. Yeah. But who knows?
I don't think the world is sleeping on the Saints, but some might disagree. NFC West. Okay, what's notable again is how bullish you were on the Buccaneers, defending Super Bowl champions. You did not. It doesn't seem like you include the Rams in that discussion. This is the best division in football, top to bottom. At least that's what the market says, and I would agree. Rams, Niners, Seahawks, Cardinals. Trey Lance will play. We don't know in what form, but he will have design plays from Kyle Shanahan with the Niners. Seahawks on the right side of variance, perhaps last year. Cardinals, Kyler Murray. I don't know where you stand on him. How do you see this? Where is the best bet? And do you consider the Rams in the same stratosphere as the Buccaneers?
The Seahawks are on the right side of variance every year, it feels like, right? That's weird.
That's Russell Wilson's hallmark, isn't it?
That's his MO.
Yeah.
I have some brewing hot takes on Russell Wilson. I feel like Seattle probably should have sold high on him last offseason, but we'll see if that comes to fruition.
I like when hot takes are brewing. I like it.
Because I just don't buy Pete Carroll's vision for how to play offensive football in today's NFL. It just doesn't jive.
Establish the run.
I don't see it, man. I don't see that working out with this roster, not in this conference, not in this division. Similarly, the Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury is not my guy. I think that both Cardinals and Seahawks are probably at risk of underachieving on the basis of coaching. And then the Rams and the Niners, I think, are going to duke this out to the bitter end of this season. I think this is going to be a very close division between these two teams. And at this point, preseason, again, it all comes down to schedule. The Niners got the advantage to start the season relative to the Rams. I know the Rams, you look at their first two games, Chicago and Indy, and now considering what's going on with Indy, and you think, oh, well, whatever, you know, they're going to get 2-0. That Indy spot is kind of tricky. It's kind of not great. They're coming off of a primetime game against Chicago at home, and they got to go play an early game the next week against Indianapolis. So it's not an ideal start to their season. And then they get Tampa Bay week three, and then they have a couple of very difficult back-to-backs. They got to go play Seattle the second home game for Seattle, big primetime spot Thursday Night Football week five. You know, there are some landmines for this Rams team through the first 6 weeks of the season, which really has me wanting to be patient and try to kind of scoop some Rams value after about week five. San Francisco, on the other hand, starts out with Detroit, Philly on the road. They are staying at the Greenbrier in West Virginia in between those two games.
Very nice.
That's been the secret to success for these guys. Like that extended training camp where they all kind of get together and nobody's, you know, distracted, and they're focusing on, you know, what they did week one and how to prepare for week two. Now, I'm expecting the Niners to have a really strong start to their season. They host Green Bay and Seattle after that. They get Seattle in an advantage spot where Seattle's on the back-to-back, you know, second of back-to-back road games coming off of a game in Minnesota. So, yeah, it's a nice start to the season in terms of, you know, where they have advantages and how they match up against the teams they're playing. I think they can get out to a good 4-0, 5-0 start heading into their bye, regardless of whether they go with Trey Lance or Jimmy Garoppolo. If they go with Trey Lance week one, which I think at this point I would make a little better than 50-50, I'm all in on this team. Because he gets a very soft landing to start his career. I think the dynamic, you know, the dynamic he adds in terms of his downfield passing with this offense and everything else they're good at really just differentiates them from the rest of the division. And yeah, I mean, why be cool on the Rams? There's one reason. It's injury concerns. This is a very thin team. Everybody has said this. This is not a secret at this point. It's a stars and scrubs unit. Even a guy like Stafford, who's a clear upgrade over Goff, is subject to injuries. How many weeks have we said, man, Stafford's playing through pain? You know, I mean, he doesn't know how to avoid the hit. He doesn't know how to kind of, you know, keep himself out of harm's way at times because he plays a little loose. And, you know, you need Stafford to stay healthy for full 17 game season. You need Donald to stay healthy. You need Ramsey to stay healthy. You need the offensive line to stay healthy. You need every skill position player to stay healthy. Like, you've already lost Cam Akers. You really can't afford to lose anyone else meaningful, or you're going to put replacement level players in some really important positions for this team. So the Rams, just the way they're constructed, are super fragile. Yeah. And so I think waiting and getting a little more information on, you know, how healthy they are after the first opening few weeks of the season is important.
I mentioned it on Primetime Action last night because we do 32 teams and 32 shows, and we're on the Rams yesterday. And I mentioned that depth is their Achilles heel. Like, that is the thing with the Rams. Okay, here we go. I mentioned you had 11 season win totals in college football. UCLA has already played, so we won't talk about that one. Of the remaining 10, four have sort of moved through the parameters that you had given. So we have six left that are viable, still bettable, Dr. Bob season win totals. We don't have to go crazy, long on each of these, but let's go through them relatively quickly. And let's start in the MAC with Ohio, coaching change, Tim Albin in for Frank Solich.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm not, you know, it could be a negative. It's certainly not a positive that Solich sort of had this late departure and that the offensive coordinator had to take over. But I'm not going to treat it as a negative. I'll just assume everything's as it was when I started doing the analysis on this team. So they could be worse than I think. But I like the under anyway. They're under 6.5 wins. Ohio was just, remember they had 3 years of Nathan Rourke at quarterback. And this guy was one of the best. I think he got some Heisman votes. He was one of the best dual threat quarterbacks in the nation, a better than average passer, not just by MAC standards, but by national standards, and ran for 1,000 yards a season. He was a very, very good quarterback. And in Nathan Rourke's final season, which he had a great year, and I think that's the year he got Heisman votes, Ohio was still only 6-6 that year in 2019. Last year, Nathan's brother, Curtis, took over. Now, Curtis is a pretty accurate passer, and that's fine. He's not the runner that his brother was, but they have another guy that runs the ball, that comes in at quarterback and runs the ball. The problem was they looked better than they were last year. They ended up being 2-1 last year, and they outscored their opponents by 18 points a game. But in those three games they played last year, two of them were against Akron and Bowling Green, which are two of the worst five teams in the nation. So the fact that they played those two teams is sort of being overlooked. Like, Ohio's Ohio, and they're going to win 6 or 7 or 8 games again. I just don't think that's the case. The offense, from a, you know, compensating for who they played, was worse than average last year. But the big problem was that the defense continues to be terrible. In the previous two or three seasons prior to last year, Ohio's defense was about a yard per play worse than average after you compensate for the schedule. And last year, they only gave up 5.5 yards per play, and they only gave up about 17 points a game. But once again, they played Akron and Bowling Green were two of their three games, and Central Michigan was the other one, who's certainly not a world beater. So they only gave up 5.5 yards per play, but those three teams would combine to average 4.6 yards per play against an average defensive team. So they were still about a yard per play worse than average. Their defense is just not good. It's not good this year. The offense is going to be decent by MAC standards, but certainly not good enough to win seven games. So I had them at 5.3 wins heading into the season. And a total 6.5, so I bet the under.
Under 6.5 plus 105, the current number at BetMGM. Let's go to Texas Tech. A lot of people love Texas Tech this year. Tyler Shugg coming over from Oregon. So much hype for him. Where do you stand on the Red Raiders?
Well, there should be. The problem at Texas Tech the last couple of years, and I wrote about this, some is Alan Bowman sucked. I mean, people thought he was good because he completed, you know, 68, 69% of his passes. But he all those passes were short passes. And the competition he faced when he's putting all those numbers were like Stephen F. Austin or, you know, these terrible teams before he got hurt. In 2019, he put up what seemingly good stats, but they were against terrible defensive teams. And then so relatively, he wasn't that good. And then he got injured, and then Jet Duffy came in, the backup quarterback. And in this offense, Jet Duffy averaged 7.2 yards per pass play, and Tech averaged 32 points a game over the eight games with Duffy at quarterback, all against Big 12 teams. That's the kind of offense Texas Tech could have with a decent quarterback. Now, Shuck is certainly better than Jet Duffy. I mean, Shuck was the starter at Oregon last year and averaged over 8 yards per pass play. So this offense that's been mostly under Alan Bowman, and then Columbia last year had to play because Bowman got hurt again, and Columbia was a backup at Utah State. So the talent level at quarterback is the key here. If they can average 32 points a game against Big 12 competition with Jet Duffy at quarterback a couple years ago, their offense is going to be very good with Shuck at quarterback. If he was good at Oregon last year, and the offense is the running game was good last year, it's just the yards per pass play compensated was just not that good for Texas Tech. It's going to be very good this year. And the thing that people don't realize about Texas Tech is their defense was actually pretty good last year. They gave up 37 points a game, but they were -9 in turnovers. The offense didn't hurt them, didn't help them at all. You know, and there's also a lot of possessions because Texas Tech runs at a fast pace. So the defense, though, looking at yards per play allowed, they only gave up 5.5 yards per play to a schedule that would normally average 5.9 against an average defense. So they were actually better than average defensively last year. They have 8 returning starters. They've added talent at defense. They've got some transfers coming in for some Power 5 schools. I think the Texas Tech defense is going to be better than average again, and the offense is going to be good. So I project 6.8 wins for Texas Tech, and it was over 5 minus 165, which is basically over 5.5, and I predict 6.8. So
yeah,
I think the over is a good play.
It's over 5 minus 165 at BetMGM, but just looking, you always got to shop around. DraftKings, over 4.5 minus 152, so even better over there at DraftKings.
Yeah.
That would absolutely be a play from Dr. Bob. Let's go to the AAC. SMU with a lot of experience returning, 17 starters back, and even the big holes that they needed to fill, that still needed to be filled, I should say, quarterback, kicker, tight end, were taken care of in the transfer portal. So what about SMU, knowing that as a backdrop?
Yeah, you know, a couple years ago, they got Shane Buechele from Texas. So he was a starter at Texas, lost his job, and then came over to a very good system that works everywhere. You know, that system's worked at Louisiana Tech. It worked at Cal. It's working here at SMU. Now they get Oklahoma, former Oklahoma backup Tanner Mordecai, and I think that's a talent upgrade at quarterback. The key to SMU being underrated, so everybody knows Mordecai is going to be good and the offense is going to be fine, but the key is that Reggie Roberson has been hurt the last 2 years. He's a big play wide receiver. If he stays healthy, this offense is going to be very, very good. Now, Roberson in the last 2 years has caught passes for 1,177 yards. He's averaged 12.4 yards per target, not 12.4 yards per catch, 12.4 yards per target, When Roberson is healthy, this offense is great. In 2019, the pass attack was 1.7 yards per pass play better in the 7 games with Roberson than the 6 games without him. And last season, they were a full yard per pass play better compensated in the 4 games that Roberson played than the 6 games without him. When Roberson is healthy, this offense is another level. And as long as he's healthy, and I guess who knows, he's been hurt the last 2 years, but they averaged 42 points in 2019 and 39 points last season with Roberson playing about half the games. If he plays the whole season, their offense is going to average over 40 points a game. And their defense was actually only 0.2 yards per play worse than average on a national scale last year. And they return enough starters. They should be about the same this year. But the key is Roberson. If this guy's healthy, he's a future NFL player. And with Mordecai at quarterback, the offense is going to be unstoppable. I just think SMU is an underrated team for that reason. And I projected 8.2 wins, and it's a 6.5 minus 140. I think it might have gone down a little bit, so I think that's a good over.
Yeah, over 6.5 minus 120 at BetMGM. Again, shop around for all of these. Let's go to Middle Tennessee. Not exactly the sexiest of college football programs, but with a coach intact for many years and a team that won a lot of close games last year, as I recall, 3 wins, well, not a lot of games, but 3 wins were by 6 points or fewer. The difference, again, between 3-6 and 5-4, 5 points basically the other way in close losses. So they're a team that that thrived on winning the close ones. Where do you stand on the Blue Raiders of Middle Tennessee State?
Well, the last 2 years, I mean, this is a team, like you said, that coach has been there forever, Stockdale. And he had, I mean, he must have had 8 or 9 years in a row where they had winning records. And then they had, the last 2 years have been bad. The defense has been the big issue. They just haven't been able to stop it. There's injuries. There's been a little bit of lack of talent, et cetera. Scott Schaefer, the defensive coordinator, has proven that he can put together good defenses. He's got 10 returning starters, some added talent. I just think the defense can't possibly be as bad as it's been the last 2 years. And I think the offense is going to be better. They got 9 returning starters on offense. They added former NC State starter Bailey Hockman. He hasn't been announced as the starter yet. But I do think Hockman is going to end up winning that job. And if he doesn't, that means the other quarterback, Cunningham, has really improved. And you know, he was the backup last year. So either way, the quarterbacking is going to be better this year. And the defense can't possibly be as bad as it was last year. And reports are that the defense has played a lot better in camp than they have in recent years. And there's a lot more depth, et cetera. So I just think they're just going to be so much better defensively. And the offense, I think, is going to be upgraded with Hockman. And the rest of CUSA, I think, is down. I just think it's an overrated conference in general. I think, even though I don't think this team is a good team, I just think they're good enough to win. I have them favored in 6 games. They play Monmouth. It's actually a decent team by MPS standards
I'm betting,
open the season.
Yeah, I'm betting Monmouth, plus 7.5.
Yeah. I just think that's the one I'm actually worried about. Because I think they should be favored in that game, but not by a lot. So if they get past Monmouth, that's the key, because they'll beat UConn, and they got a lot of Conference USA teams that they're better than. I project 6.2 wins, and it's over 5, so I think it's a pretty good bet.
And you and I did not talk about that, the Monmouth Middle Tennessee State game, but I am that's my favorite college football bet of the weekend, FCS versus FBS, taking the 7.5
points. I hope
points.
You're wrong about that one.
I know you do. 2 more season win totals from Dr. Bob coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN and his thoughts on week 1 right here, the Sports Betting Network. Dr. Bob is with us at Dr. Bob Sports is where you can follow him on Twitter. Just to review the 4 season win totals that he has already given out on the show. Ohio, under 6.5, plus 105. I want to give him in the order that he gave him. Texas Tech, he likes the over on the Red Raiders. 4.5 we saw. 4.5 minus 152 at DraftKings. So even better there than other places. SMU over 6.5 minus 120. And then Middle Tennessee State, he likes over 4.5 minus 135. Couple more here, Bob. San Diego State. You are bullish on the Aztecs.
Yeah, you know, here's a team that consistently has a great defense every single year. Not just great by players, but actually very great on a national scale. Last year, they allowed only 4.5 yards per play, and they faced teams that were, and they think BYU was part of that. I mean, they only gave up 28 points to BYU last year. That was the only team that averaged more than 5.5 yards per play against San Diego State in 8 games last year. And they played San Jose State and Nevada. They played some decent Mountain West teams with good offenses. They held all of those teams to under 5.5 yards per play. So their defense, with a ton of starters back again, should be great once again. The issue with San Diego State in recent years is the offense. Last year, they were nearly a yard per play worse than average offensively, 5.2 yards per play against teams that normally allow 6.1 yards per play to an average FBS team. But the offense has 9 returning starters back. The quarterback position has been a big problem lately. That reportedly is much improved. They have a couple quarterbacks, they think, that are already better than last year's starter who transferred out. So I think the offense will be better. I don't think their offense is going to be good by any stretch, but it doesn't have to be that good. Last year they went 4-4, and that's why I think they're underrated a bit, because they only were 500 team last year, but they outscored their opponents by 7 points a game. So they were better than their record last year. They're going to be probably just as good defensively this year, and the offense will be better. So I think they came a little bit underrated coming into the season. They have their tough games at home. I think they can beat Utah, which is a team I think is overrated. They get them at home. I don't have them favored against Utah, but there's a chance they can beat Utah at home. They also have Nevada and Boise State at home, and I think those are toss-up games. If they win one of those 3 home games against a good team, they should have no problem getting to 7 wins. So over 6.5. It's minus, I don't know, 120, 125, or 130, somewhere in there. But I had them at 8.2 wins. So I think they should get over 6.5 pretty comfortably. So I bet them over.
Yeah, Todd Wishnet, by the way, reporting that you can get Texas Tech over 5 at minus 130 at DraftKings over where he is in Pennsylvania. So, again, always shop around for the best. What I'm quoting here is just the best that we happen to see at the moment. For San Diego State, over 6.5 minus 120 seems to be right around the consensus. And, Bob, Aztecs play – they still play away from campus, right, at Dignity Health Sports Park for another season, correct?
Yeah, I believe so. Okay. But I think it was Qualcomm where they used to play, and they're building a new stadium, and that's a mess. But they still will have their home crowd there, and the other team still has to travel. So I do think it is an advantage. And, you know, if they can win one of those games, Nevada, Boise State, Utah, they'll sail over 6.5 wins, I think.
All right, Utah State, new head coach Blake Anderson. Utah State, you are also on the over here.
Yeah, this is a team that went 1-5 last year after a stretch of decent teams in the past. They fell apart last year. The quarterbacking was just dreadful. They averaged 3.9 yards per pass play with 3 or 4 different quarterbacks. They were all terrible. That's not going to be the case this year. Blake Anderson comes over from Arkansas State, where he had a lot of success in 7 years there building that program. He brought over one of his 2 quarterbacks, Logan Bonner, who's been a starter for 3 or 4 years at Arkansas State. Bonner was the worst of the 2 quarterbacks there. I think Arkansas State's offense is going to be real good now that Bonner's gone, but he's a huge upgrade for Utah State. He also brought over one of their best receivers, Brandon Bowling, from Arkansas State. So the pass attack is going to be much, much better. The defense should also be better. 9 returning starters on defense. He also brought one of his best defensive players over from Arkansas State, linebacker Justin Rice, who was first team all Sun Belt last season. So I mean, the defense is going to be better. Better talent, better coaching, and I project 5.2 wins for Utah State.
Ooh, over 3.5. Like that little difference. Yeah.